Welcome to the Free to Choose Media Podcast. In today's podcast, originally recorded in 2000, the late Dr. Reinhard Selten, director of the Laboratory for Experimental Economics, and the late Dr. John F. Nash, Jr., professor of mathematics at Princeton University and subject of the film A Beautiful Mind, discuss game theory applications. We hope you enjoyed today's podcast, and don't forget to subscribe to get updates each week for the Free to Choose Media Podcast.
So let me maybe talk about what you are doing now, because I know that you are more, maybe also more involved in physics than, than in game theory at the moment. No?
That is not true, actually. I was thinking about physics and cosmology, but I began thinking about that when my mental state was not entirely normal, perhaps. Just like I began thinking about computing and numbers and some number theoretical ideas in the same time. And I would do elaborate computations and play around. And I believe sometimes that I found miraculous coincidences with numbers during those times. But then after I've been transformed by this Nobel Prize that we shared with Harsanyi. And so I'm working on game theory again since that time. Not so much immediately, but I got an idea in 96. Which was like a year and a half afterwards. I have been pursuing that. It leads to things that can be done, reduced to computation. And I've talked about it in Italy, Bergamo, and as a guest of Gambarelli, and I've also talked about it in the U.S.
What is it about?
It's basically, it could be related to what's been called the Nash program.
Yes.
Trying to deal with cooperative games in some way
to model them non-cooperatively. This was
to model the process of bargaining and negotiation or whatever would actually be done. And of course that's difficult beyond two players. In two players it seems not so difficult, perhaps, but there's still controversy.
And you have new ideas in this direction?
Yes, I have them on my web page. You might not have looked at my web page.
I never look at any web page. I don't have a computer at home. I don't have internet. I don't look at any web page yet. I mean, that may seem to be strange, but this is what it is.
It's an interesting thing. It's not strange, but you know, I became interested in computers when I was still, as you could say, not in my right mind. I mean, some years ago that I, I think some of the Princeton people were sort of encouraging me in that direction as like as occupational therapy. When people who are mentally disturbed, they can be given something to do sometimes in hospitals.
No, I don't think it's bad to do. For decades, I tell myself that I should learn to deal with the computer. In fact, I did. I have some experience, very little, but I have some experience with computers. But I told myself that maybe it would be interesting to go more into depth, into computing and so on, and to do my own programming of things which are of interest for me. But there are so many other things to do, and maybe my comparative advantage is not really there. So I didn't get around to do it. But aha, you are involved in this again, in this non-cooperative modeling. You know that there is quite a literature around about these non-cooperative models. No?
Yes, I know there is.
If you have seen, I myself have done something about characteristic function games, how to model them by what was later called the proposal models by others. No? They have a very simple model of non-cooperative model, which says that a player can make the proposal to a about the division of a coalition, and then he then asks one after the other on this coalition whether he agrees. And if somebody doesn't agree, he gets initiative and can make a proposal to any coalition and so on. And that goes on until it stops, until one coalition proposal with payoff divisions is accepted by every member. And if you impose certain selection criteria on these equilibria of the dynamic of this game, it is technically a recursive game. Then you can get out an answer which is, for example, in the three-person game connected to the quotas and so on.
I've been thinking that the selection process might be needed in what I am doing. It's not clear at the beginning, what the modeling, whether one would maybe have sort of a uniqueness or when the one would have a context for selection.
What is the model? Is it possible to talk about the model?
Well, the model is sort of variable. I don't have just one model, but I have the recursive game context.
Yeah.
And I could get into that, but I'd like to say something else first. With your proposal game, do you get a value?
Yes, I get, of course, I get an expected value for every player, which is the value which he has if he has a chance to begin the game, which is, of course, doesn't necessarily add up to the Grand Coalition because it may be advantageous to be able to begin the game.
Oh, you don't have, so you have.
But then, of course, you could add to this that maybe there is a random choice in the beginning of the game where a player is selected, and then you get something like a value, only it is not a value like the Shapley value, because it doesn't exhaust the Grand Coalition. Yeah?
It's not Pareto efficient.
It's not efficient. And this is because if you, for example, have a three-person quota game with a Grand Coalition, which doesn't make it possible to give the quotas to everybody, then, of course, the Grand Coalition cannot, if it doesn't have the core, the game, then the Grand Coalition cannot appear in this kind of in equilibrium. And this is at least not in the one which I select by additional criteria. Now, it is true that if you do not impose any criteria, you get a huge, space of equilibrium.
This question of selection, I did notice that, of course, you worked with Harsanyi on selection, and I really think you achieved something very basic there. It's like the road has not been completed to some distant objective, which maybe is not quite understood, but the idea that there can be a process of selection.
Yes.
This is not quite apparent at the beginning.
It's obvious. It's not obvious, but the idea is that, and this is probably also basic for the Nash program. I mean, a selection is basic for that, because the basic idea is that the rational way to play the game must be defined. I mean, there must be a prescription which is known to everybody. There must be a theory which everybody knows. And if a game has many equilibria, the theory has to tell you which one to play. Yeah? Because if the theory doesn't tell you which equilibrium to play, then you would not play an equilibrium at all. Yeah?
Yes. Yeah? Yes.
Because then you would have to form subjective probabilities about maybe the others playing different kind of equilibria, but that would be naive because they also don't know what equilibrium is to be played, and then you are back to square one. I mean, you have nothing. I mean, the whole idea of equilibrium as a rational construct, not as a behavioral construct, as a rational construct. A behavioral construct is something else, as you yourself also pointed out in these mass games. Yeah, it is.
In biology, it's like
mass games. In biology, it is different. But as a rational construct, you need equilibrium selection in order to make equilibrium theory work in games with many equilibria.
But there can be a difficulty if your selection doesn't give you something that is Pareto efficient, if you were really thinking in terms of realizing efficient cooperation.
Yeah, but the Pareto efficiency is overestimated, the importance of that. I mean, there are situations in which you cannot achieve Pareto efficiency. So, if you want to achieve Pareto efficiency, you have to create the institutions in such a way that it is possible.
Yes, but of course that's what we have in civilization. One could trace it to the Romans. There is civil law, contract law.
Yes.
Corporations can form contract. I was interested, this is not game theory exactly, but there's a lot of news about these two German banks that are merging.
Yes.
Mergers and acquisitions. This is the cooperative game context.
It is a cooperative game, but the actual fact about these things is a little more complex. I mean, if you approach this question of acquisition and merger from the cooperative game theory point of view, you think of a characteristic function, with or without side payments, and then people forming a coalition in order to increase their profits. However, and this is something I find not enough emphasized, is that all the business is not really about profits, in my view. So business is not about doing profits. Business is about power, vision, and slack.
And what?
Slack.
Slack.
Organizational slack. So that is my view of business is somewhat different from the main profession, from the mainstream in the profession.
But in theory...
And let me first say about the merger. Yeah, the merger is not to be understood from the profit point of view, because most of the mergers really and taking overs are not profitable. There are empirical numbers about this, that two-thirds of these things later turn out not to be profitable. I mean, they are losing. And the motor of this kind of behavior is not profit, it is power, well, or vision.
I certainly can see that there is that, but when you say something is unprofitable, I wonder how it's measured. Like sometimes a corporation A pays a very high price for corporation B.
It is measured like this, that you could say that afterwards, both companies, you look at after a while what both companies together are worth, and this allows you to, and what they were worth separately before,
Yes.
And that allows you to make such statements. Also, whether actually the worth which was gained for the joint company was overpaid or not. Also, that can be then determined empirically. And there are such empirical investigations which come up with the result that these mergers are usually not profitable. And in fact, the mergers you see now are fueled by the fear that if you don't eat others, you will be eaten.
Yeah? The bigger fish are more difficult to swallow.
Yes. That's why you have to merge, not to be swallowed.
But there is one thing. It is possible if corporation A is larger and buys corporation B, sometimes there is a merger of exchange of shares of paper and so on. But sometimes there is just a payment of money.
Yes.
Now the merged corporation, after the payment, like if Daimler-Chrysler paid cash, if Daimler paid cash for Chrysler, and all these stockholders in the USA were paid money, then it would not be surprising afterwards that Daimler-Chrysler would be worth less than Daimler and Chrysler were before the merger.
These studies take all this into account, what was paid and so on. This should not be less, because if they paid...
Well, they may have had cash in the bank. The corporation can have some cash, and that could be part of its assets.
No, I think these studies took all this into account and make the right calculations. Of course, you have to be careful to do this, and they took this into account. Partially this is power. I mean, businessmen, like politicians, strive for power. And also, like politicians, they often have a vision. It is often mentioned that somebody wanted to make his firm the leading in his industry, and so on. This is what I call vision. Somebody has an idea, to build up something grand, and to leave a trace in history. This is what drives politicians, but also businessmen to some extent.
Businessmen are always talking of vision. That's a very popular word. Businessmen, but like scientists don't so much talk about vision, I guess.
Yeah, but for many,
but maybe to some extent they do.
To some extent also, because I mean, many. I mean, you have to have some concept of something great you want to achieve.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And many do have this. I mean, when I set out with John Harsanyi to do this work on equilibrium selection, we also had a vision, yeah, that we wanted to achieve something. Now, as it always happened, we didn't achieve quite as much as we wanted to achieve. Yeah, but it was important to have such a vision.
Yes, I do think that it might be best if there's a sort of category of games where you at least have equilibria that are Pareto efficient.
Yeah, of course. I mean, you can construct bargaining models of this kind.
Yes.
We have some, for example, constructed another bargaining model, non-cooperative model, which does have this property and which also, and this is the demand commitment game. And that functions as following. One player is selected at random. He either gets out of his game, yeah, with his individual value, or he names a demand for a payoff, commits himself to that. Then the next player is selected at random, and he can either form, I mean, this is one version. Other version is that he names the next player, can also do this. But the simplest is that this is random. And the next player then can either form the two-person coalition with him and take the remainder, what he gets only what he is committed to, what the demand which he has asked for.
The first player made a demand.
Made a demand.
And he's given that. And then if
the remainder is for the second player if he makes the coalition. But he can also make his own demand, yeah?
Yes.
And not form a coalition. Then the third player then can choose to make a coalition with the first one, with the second one, or with all three of them, yeah?
This is an interesting model. Yes.
Yeah? And what is more to it, if you repeat it only twice,
yes,
you get a solution. I mean, which is independent of... no, not twice is not enough. But you repeat it a finite number of times. You have to repeat it only a finite number of the of times in order to get something like a value.
I don't quite understand what the repeating means.
Repeating means that if no coalition is formed in one, then you begin anew.
Is there some random selection?
Random selection of the first again.
I see.
Yeah? For example, if you take the unanimity game, two-person unanimity game, mm-hmm, then if you play only one round, then you would say, well, we play for the division of 100.
Simple bargaining.
I would be like ultimatum bargaining. No? I would ask for, if I am the player, ask for almost 100 and you have to take it. But if it is two rounds, then in the first round I will already ask only for half, for 50. Yeah, because in the second round I'm
Very nice. Yes.
It's the same probability for both to be in this ultimatum position.
Yes.
Yeah?
Yes.
In this kind of demand commitment, is also now used in the literature. And I think Winter has shown that in convex games, it leads to the Shapley value.
Yes. Well, there are some, I've been doing, one of my models is similar to that, but I'm having simultaneous.
You have simultaneous, yes. Yeah, I tried always to model these things in sequential, so that you can then look for subgame perfect equilibria. It is easier. I mean, if it is sequential, it's easier. No?
Yes, I see.
The simultaneous, I mean, you have more chance to get a unique equilibrium. In fact, in the demand commitment game, if you impose certain small costs, you can get, at least in the three-person case, something unique, which I showed. But it is the reason why you don't get something unique easily. I mean, you cut back from behind. Nevertheless, you don't get something unique easily, because often it happens that two possibilities are equally good. You have to, to have to make a selection. Of course, if you are willing to assume that in the case that somebody has several equally good options, then he takes them with equal probability, then you get, by this kind of selection criterion, you might get immediately something unique in these games. But if you have simultaneous moves, that's, of course, more difficult.
Yes, it is, of course, complicated.
It's very ambitious what you do with these simultaneous moves.
Hmm? I haven't, as far as successful computational results, I'm not beyond two players. So that doesn't count for so much. But the attempt is to go to three. But we said that Ayo Winter had achieved a Shapley value in a large...
Only for the class of convex cooperative games. Right? I mean, where... Yeah, you know what convex games are. I mean, you get a larger collisions are, very profitable in these convex games. Now it is, I have written about this in the essays in honor of John Harsanyi.
Oh, yes.
Yeah? So I have written about the demand commitment game. And we have done experiments with this. We have done lots of experiments with the proposal game.
Oh, yes.
You see, what comes out in the experiments is that people achieve Pareto optimality where they shouldn't, according to the theory. No?
Ah. Well, but in this Winter thing, he's arriving at the Shapley value.
Yes.
Could it be significant that there is a random choice? Of
Yes, it's significant. I mean, the random choice is very significant.
That is the key.
That is the key there. Also, that because it's, I mean, if you look at the demand commitment closely, you see immediately why this comes about. But it is also connected to the convexity of the game. I mean, that you need actually, because if it is not convex, the thing is more difficult. You get some kind of other value, you could say. Yeah, I mean, you get some value, that's clear.
Right? A value that's different from the Shapley.
Yeah.
And it is not of interest.
Yeah, it is not, you see, it would be kinky. It is not a linear,
But the nucleonus is not linear.
Yeah, it's also not linear. Yeah.
Well, that's, I'm trying to compute on the three persons there. I don't know that I found anything, but the first attempt on a simple type of game where two players were symmetric, it was a three, a very simple type of three-person game, which could be described by a characteristic function. I was seeming to be getting the result that the nucleolus was right rather than the Chapley value.
Yeah, that depends on your model. I mean, I don't know what your model is. No?
Yeah, well, I don't know that it was correct because this is not exactly intuitive. Mm-hmm. The model, the game, what do you think of this sort of a game? Three players can get one if they all agree. But if players one and two agree separately, and player three is not included, this is like a characteristic function, then they can get 1/4. Mm-hmm. And they can subdivide that. Otherwise, nobody gets anything.
There's only these two collisions.
They're the only ones that pay.
Yeah, the others get all zero.
Yes.
Aha, yes.
Now, I understand that the Chapley value, players one and two, let's see exactly what, I forget exactly what they get, but they get a certain benefit compared to, so that one is divided. I think player three gets a fourth, and
They get together only 1/4. 1 and 2 get only 1/4, and 1, 2, 3 get 1. This is all.
Yes. I think the Chapley value was the value for player three is
over through. This is very interesting. This is very interesting. The Chapley value, well, it's too tedious now, really, to compute it.
But I thought it was player three got one. I think player three gets 1/4, and 1 and 2 get 3/8 each. But the nucleolus each gets 1/3 for the same game.
Yeah, the third is. We can't compute this now, I think.
It is very tedious.
We have to continue this conversation elsewhere. So I thank you very much for this very interesting conversation.
Want more episodes like this? Don't forget to subscribe and get updates each week for the Free to Choose Media Podcast.